You guys ever been stressed before? Well, I have, I am, and I don't know if life will continue to be stressful the older I get, but one of the most stressful things is getting up in front of people and talking. But before that, moving is a stressful thing. You know what I really want to do right now? Lay down right here and take a nap. So if I fall asleep, feel free to throw something at me. And we're going to do something just a little bit different first, and then we might do something you have never seen before in this room. I have, it's kind of a sermon outline, but it's also coloring pages and colors. So if you are interested in coloring Buzz Lightyear and something else, they're right over there. Just take two crayons. Crayons are yours, but don't go crazy. So anyone at any time, since I'm a youth pastor, I'm used to people getting up and either leaving or just getting up and doing something else. So feel free. Who's going to be first? And it's not just for kids, it's for other people too. So I want to read, we're going to be in Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. And I'm going to read it from four different translations. And it's a, am I allowed to move around, Jerry? Okay. First one, I'm going to do it from Contemporary English Version. Hebrews 12, 1 and 2. Since, or such a large crowd of witnesses is all around us, so we must get rid of everything that slows us down, especially the sin that just won't let go. And we must be determined to run the race that's ahead of us. We must keep our eyes on Jesus, who leads us and makes our faith complete. He endured the shame of being nailed to the cross because he knew that later on he would be glad he did. Now he is seated at the right hand of God's throne. We'll do the New Century Version. We are surrounded by a great cloud of people whose lives tell us what faith means. So let us run the race that's before us and never give up. We should remove from our lives anything that would get in the way and the sin that so easily holds us back. Let us look only to Jesus, the one who began our faith and who makes it perfect. He suffered death on the cross, but he accepted the shame as if it were nothing because of the joy that God put before him. And now he is sitting at the right side of God's throne. And the last one, the Message. Do you see what this means? All these pioneers who blazed the way, all these veterans cheering us on. It means we'd better get on with it. Strip down, start running, and never quit. No extra spiritual fat. No parasitic sins. Keep your eyes on Jesus, who both began and finished this race we're in. Study how he did it. Okay, I'm done. Kidding. These are two of my favorite verses in all the Bible. And I've actually preached this before, and the first time I preached it was 1992. A long time ago. I was in college. And it was like one of the very first sermons I ever preached that kind of got me interested in being a youth pastor. So this is a message that really, it's close to who I am. I can't run as fast as I used to anymore, but I pretend to sometimes. I remember the first time I ever went skiing, snow skiing, and I'd never done it before. And when you go snow skiing, I was in Colorado, and I believe it was Copper Mountain or somewhere where the slopes were like this. And I remember never done it before, never put skis on before. So just trying to walk with skis on was an adventure. And I remember asking one of my friends, what do I do? And he said, well, when the lift comes, you need to lift your skis up and just kind of hop on, and it'll take you up. And I did that. He didn't tell me how to get off the lift. So fortunately, I only fell just a little bit, and I got out of the way of people that knew what they were doing. And I remember looking down at this. It was a blue. It wasn't a really... It was bad for me. And I said, what do I do? And there's like training, but they didn't tell me about that. Like how to stop, how to snowplow, how to do the little turn like that. Here's what he said. Point and go. Point your skis and go. And so I was like, sounds simple enough. I was a baseball player. I can do this. So I start off going real slow. I have the poles, and I've seen it on TV. It can't be that difficult. So I'm like this. I'm in a tuck position, and I start picking up speed. And I'm going, I forgot to ask him how to stop. So I'm going downhill. I see the lift above me, and I look up. I lose kind of my balance. The poles just start doing this, and I go end over end, just down. Didn't hurt. Now, I would have like broken bones, and I could see people laughing at me, and I had a ski way up because the skis went flying. I went flying, and it was an experience that I'll never forget. It was something I could see before me. I could see what I was about to do. You know what the agony of defeat is? Wide, wide world of sports. Mount Midoriyama. What is that? American Ninja Warrior. We got really hooked on this show last year. And what these guys do is they go through this training for about a year or more, their whole life. And they have to qualify to go to this Mount Midoriyama and do these obstacles. And one small step can cost them. They're training for years and years and years. And they have to do these steps. They have to run and jump. I couldn't do hardly any of it. And one of the last things that they have to do is a 14-foot incline. They have to run up the incline, grab a hold, pull themselves up after 10 events. And most of them, they don't even make it. But all that training reminds me of what we're going to talk about. Olympics. You see Olympics? Gymnasts? You see the look on their face? Those 13-year-old girls and those 20-year-old boys, they're over the hill when you're 20 in gymnastics. And just right before they get ready to start, you can see the look on their face. That intense, what if I mess up? And they've been training their whole life. And one small step, one on the dismount, they do that and they step back. And it costs some of them points for a medal. And I thought of what it must have been like to all of a sudden, after all those years of intense training, to step up to the line to see if that training was worth one slip. And there's a sense in which you're stepping up to the line in your own race. And we'll call it a race because it's life, and life is all about not standing still. Life is all about moving one step at a time. Anybody nervous yet? Okay, I won't do that, sorry. But there's a sense in which, from God's perspective, the training that's been going on in your life as a person who's God's person, you're going to be tested this week. I don't know what that test might be. It might be something that's like really intense. It might be something that you do every day. But you're going to be tested this week. And I don't know what that test is going to involve for you. I don't even know what it's going to involve for me. Because each day has enough trouble of its own. But there's a race that you and I need to run this week. And when you look at Hebrews 12:1-2, there's a central command that you have in these two verses. I'm not an English major, and correct me if I'm wrong, but if you boil it down to a central command, what the author says here is run the race set before you with endurance. So let's boil it down a little bit more. Here's the central thought. You know what it is? This is going to blow your mind. Ready? Run the race. A lot of us, and I watch this with students, and I watch it maybe even more with us. We're sitting on the sidelines. We haven't finished the fight. When Paul said that, that he had finished the fight, he was done. It was almost time for him to go be with the Lord. A lot of us, we've given up, we've quit. And the central thought here is run the race, don't give up. Everything else in these two verses just support this thought. And the Greek word for race, does anybody know what that is? Dave? Come on. Agon. Do you know what the English word is for that? Agony. Running. Why do you like running? It's agony. So, 1 Corinthians. You can turn there or just listen, or if you start snoring, then I'll be offended. Do you not know that in a race all the runners run, but only one gets the prize? Run in such a way as to get the prize. In a race, we all have to run, or you're not going to win. And he's telling us in 1 Corinthians to run in such a way as to get the prize. Run with endurance, run with stamina, run with courage, run with other people. So back in the first century, every major city would have this big, huge track. Because they loved track and field and Olympics. And as the runners would run down onto the track, they could see exactly what they were about to run on, that which was before them. So they would run down and they would know that they're about to step up to the line to see if their training was worth the many, many years of work, hard work, eating right, drinking right, exercising, not watching TV, stuff like that. And the author of Hebrews here is drawing an analogy there, and he's saying to us, hey guys, he's actually saying it to the group of Hebrews, and it was a group of Christians. And he was saying, hey guys, just like they're about to step up to the line, you are too. It applies to us today just like it did to them years ago. And he's saying you're in the same boat and you need to run this race successfully. And you need to run it with endurance. Even when there's pressure on your life, you need to keep on running the race that is set before you. I want to ask you a question. Think about it. Write it down on your coloring page or whatever. Or your blank. That's a pretty picture, Jamie. I like it. What is that race God has for you? What is it that you clearly know that you're supposed to do, but you're procrastinating or you're hesitant to do it because you don't have someone to encourage you? What is that race for you? In general, I think the author here is speaking about hanging in there in a life that's obedient to God, where no matter what the circumstances are, you find, or whatever you find yourself in, that you endure and that you respond obediently in a way God wants you to. So, do you know what that area in your life that God's wanting to fine-tune? Because God is constantly talking and communicating all the time. He's talking to you right now. and He's whispering to you. Do you know what that area that He wants to kind of tweak a little bit? Is it an attitude that you need to work on? I know we all drive a lot, and there's drivers out there that may not know they're not nearly as good at drivers as I am. I'll just put it that way. So is there an attitude that I need to work on with other drivers that cut me off? Am I supposed to exhibit a little bit more patience? Maybe it's with your thought life. How's your thought life? When you're all alone and no one else is around, what do you dwell on? What do you think about? Maybe it's the kind of things that you watch. Surf the internet or whatever. But three real basic things. Here's the first point in running a successful race. In competing in your Olympics. And you need to draw encouragement from those who have run well. Real simple. Draw encouragement from the ones who have run well. So who is this cloud of witnesses he's talking about here? Does anybody know? Ideas? Thoughts? This is the part of the different part of the way I teach. I like to teach. I don't like to preach where I talk and you just kind of look at me like, are they here? Are they thinking about the nap they're going to have this afternoon or what? Really specifically, the cloud of witnesses are the people from chapter 11. The people that have already run the race and they've run it well. And if you flip back and look, you'll see person after person by faith, this person did this. And I'll just give you one example. By faith, Noah, when warned about things not yet seen, in holy fear, built an ark to save his family. Do you think that took a lot of faith for him to build a boat for something that has never happened before? Rain? It's going to flood. What is a flood? All I know is dew. Dew comes up. That's how our grass gets. What? Water is going to come down this way and it's going to come up this way. You need to build an ark. What's an ark? I need tools. Do you think he got made fun of by other people who really didn't get what he was saying? By faith, he endured. He knew the race that he was supposed to run, and he ran his race. Do you think he wanted to give up and quit? I mean, I love the Bible and how it talks about not just successes, but failures too. And I can relate to that. I can relate to people who struggle with their faith on a daily basis, who struggle with making poor decisions, good decisions, and going, shouldn't have done that, shouldn't have said that. By the way, what faith is in the New Testament, it's not just believing in your head, it's belief plus obedience. And what the author is trying to say is since all these guys could live by faith and be obedient to God, you can too. You need to draw encouragement from those who have run well. And I used to think that what that meant was they were sitting in the stands and just passively, you know, giving me a witness. But I think what it really means is they're sitting on the edge of their seat and they're going, hey, Veronica, you can do it. Come on. I've done it before. That thing that you're struggling with right now, I struggled with it and I did it. You can do it too. I get more encouragement from people who have gone through exactly what I'm going through and come out of it alive and better off. And I'll go to that person over someone else that has a silver spoon in their mouth that's never had a bad thing happen to them. And I'll go to that person because I know they've been there and they've done that. We need that encouragement that others can give. I remember when I was in, Jamie and I we hadn't been married for very long and we worked at a camp in Kansas. And I'm not a runner, I like to play basketball, so that's short distances like that. And there was this girl, she was on the rowing team at K-State, that'd be Kansas State. And this was off season, but she needed to work out. And we had policies that you couldn't leave the property without someone else. So there were like four guys that had volunteered. We wouldn't do it every morning, but it was like 6 o'clock every morning. She wanted to run 7 miles every morning. And Dave, I know that doesn't sound like much, but for someone who doesn't run, who probably hasn't run 1 mile in his life, 7 miles was, and I was a guy, I still am, and it was no big deal. If she can do it, I can do it. So one morning, it was my turn. All the other guys had quit and said, "You're up." And I was like, "Okay, I can do this." So we get up. I think I'm going to beat her, like, up to the commons area where we're getting ready to run. And she's already up and she's stretched. She said, "Are you ready? Are you ready, Tony?" And her name was Tricia. And she said, "All right, let's go." So the most annoying thing, and David's probably like this, so he would probably annoy me if I ran with him. She carried on this conversation the whole time while we were running. And are you like that, Dave? Oh, no, he is. So we're running, and we get out of the property, and I feel pretty good. We've gone like a tenth of a mile. I'm feeling really good. And I run out of the property with her, and we're like running like side by side. And we get to about mile marker number one, and I'm like, "Wow, this burns a little bit." And she's still just talking like nothing. And I'm going, "Tricia, I don't think I can talk and run. So one or the other." And she's like, "Okay, I'll be quiet for a little bit." And I'm running, and the pace just all of a sudden slowed a little bit. So she said, "Come on, Tony, you can do it. Come on." So she slowed her pace to keep up with me. We got to the halfway mark, and it was at a park. It was about 3.5 miles. And I got there, and I think she was being polite to me. She said, "I need to go to the bathroom, so you just sit here." And I went, "Thank you." And I just fell on the rock and just sat there for a minute. I was like, "I don't think I can do this. I need someone to come pick me up." She comes out, and she's like, "You ready for more?" And I'm like, "Tricia, I don't like you anymore." So we start running back, and we get to, and I don't know if you, there's a wall that you hit, and if you can get past that wall, you start feeling okay. Not good, because running is of the devil, but I'm talking about running the race. So we're running, and we get like to the last mile. And instead of going, "Hey, Tricia, I think I'm going to die, so maybe you can carry me piggyback style," I said, "Hey, Tricia, you want to race now?" And she went, "Really? Okay." So I'm like giving it everything I have. And I'm like, I get ahead of her, and she does this, gets ahead of me. And then I catch up, and then she goes like this. And I'm like, "Are you just messing with me?" But not like that. I was like, "Are you messing?" And no one could really understand what I was saying. And we get to the very end, and she said, let's really run. And I'm like, that's what we were doing. And so I'm sprinting as hard as I can. And have you ever had your brain go faster than your body? We get to the very end, and she just kind of teases me, and girl beat me. And I had, right after that, I had to go and speak to a bunch of teenagers. So I collapse. And you know what dry heaving is? Well, let's not get into that. But, you know, I would never have made the 7 miles by myself if she hadn't have been right beside me going, "Tony, come on, you can do it. Let's just go to the next step, the thing that you can see." And we need people in our lives that will do that for us. And that's what Tricia did for me. And I have lots of people in my life, not running illustrations, but life illustrations of people who have done that. Well, here's the second thing. We need to get rid of dead weight. I'm going to try and make this really fast because I am running out of time, and Jerry said he won't pay me this week if I go over too long. So I need Michael. I need you. And let's see. We're going to have a race. Come here. Gary, you volunteered a couple weeks ago. Come here for a second. Yes, Gary. So here's what we're going to do. it talks about how we should let us also lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us. Who do you think would win in a race? Okay. Michael, I need you to put these on your ankles. It's 10 pounds total. It's not a big deal. Gary, you're going to be on this side. And all I'm asking is for you guys to just gently walk, because I don't want you to fall, to the exit sign and back. Oh, but Michael, you need to take your shoes off. You get to put those on. As quickly as possible. So, I want you to cheer for people, okay? Cheer for the one you think is going to win. Michael, the young, I mean, he's in my youth group. He just graduated. He's now a college student, and he's in shape. And now we have Gary over here, who is, he's like my dad, okay? So, and he's not wearing running attire, but neither is this guy. Okay, just remember, flippers need to walk like this. Okay, don't kick anyone in the aisle. Okay, you can, yes. You mark, get set, go. Okay, come on, who's gonna do it? Okay, so you can take that stuff off now. Thank you. Michael, you almost blew my illustration. Sweet, those little Smarties in my office that you take every day, you can have some without guilt. So get rid of dead weight. If we were really going to be serious about this, Michael would never in his right mind run a race with flippers and ankle weights. Is there anything wrong with those? No. In the context, flippers make you go faster in the water. Ankle weights are good for training. And I wore ankle weights like for about 3 months. And I thought I could jump out of the gym. It ended up hurting my ankles, but you know, you got to take the ankle weights off when you start to do other stuff. So you need to get rid of dead weight. And it talks about you need to get rid of it. It's not necessarily bad stuff. What is that thing that you need to dump and get rid of? I know what it is in my life. And here's the third thing. I think I have 3 more minutes. You need to keep your focus on Jesus. Real simple message. He says, lay aside every encumbrance. Do you know what encumbrance means? It means those things that hold tight to us to slow us down. What is wrapping its arms around you that's keeping you from running a successful race? What's he saying? What he's saying here is that we need to fasten our gaze. See if I can do this. Really quick story. Fastening our gaze. Tested tunnel. We held our breath as he disappeared into the tunnel. There were 5 of us. 5 energetic boys. School was out for the summer, so we had turned our attention to the vacant lot next to our house. The flat West Texas land was a perfect summer playground. On this particular day, it seemed that the attention of the entire world was focused on that tunnel. We had dug a ditch about 3 feet wide, 4 feet deep, that ran halfway across the lot to give it the appearance of a tunnel. We covered it with several planks and scavenged plywood and a thick layer of dirt. We camouflaged the entrance and exit with a few tumbleweeds and mesquite bushes. And presto, we had an underground tunnel. It was ready to entertain an entire neighborhood of ruffians as they fought off Indians, escaped from slavery, and invaded Normandy. When was the last time you had an imagination like that? Today was the day we would test the tunnel. Was it strong enough? Wide enough? Would it collapse? Was it deep enough? Was it too long? You know the only way to find out? Send someone in. Guinea pig. Draw straws. Ugh, short straw. So they sent someone in. And they waited. As his little feet disappeared into that tunnel that they built. Not an engineer on them. And they waited and waited until he emerged from the other side. And he jumps up. I did it. That's what Jesus did for us. He conquered death. We need to keep our gaze, our focus, firmly fixed on Jesus. Wow, there was my dyslexic moment. And if you're going to be successful in the race that God has set out for you, it's going to be because you've kept your focus right. How many of you have lost focus? And you're walking this way, and all of a sudden, a distraction, and you're like, oh, look, pretty bird. I get distracted way too often. God, thank you. Thank you for your love and your kindness. Thank you, God, that very simple message, but sometimes it's so hard to do. God, I pray that you would surround us with people that can encourage us to take the next step. Lord, I pray that we can focus all of our attention on you. And God, help us, give us the courage to get rid of what we need to get rid of so that we can have the best that life has to offer. God, thank you for this opportunity to just share my heart with my friends. And I pray that as we walk out the door, that we can just remember one thing and apply just one thing and not put stuff just in our heads, but put it in our hearts and in our feet so that we can share this with other people. So God, help us to run our race with endurance. In Jesus' name, amen.